Hello guys, Alan here, for the very short time that I'm actually going to be on this episode.
Good, let's have more of that.
Yes, because this episode is a very special interview. This is the full interview that our good friend The Grizz did with Andrew Lindsay, which focuses on the early years of Robot Wars and BattleBots in the United States of America.
It sure does.
Not only that, but this is actually going to be the last episode that we release this year.
It will be, yes. I just want to say, before we get into the interview, you can clearly tell how nervous I was doing an interview on my own, and it kind of comes off as my demeanour completely changes. But I just want to say thanks again to Andrew Lindsay for taking the time to speak to me. And as you can probably tell, when this was recorded, because there is a portion of it where we start talking about BattleBots as it was on television, because it was still on during that time. So just to let you know that this obviously isn't like a current interview. It's been in the bank for a little bit.
Yep. Also, as I mentioned, this is the last show we're doing this year. So we'd just like to thank everyone who has been following and supporting us in this first year of the podcast.
Absolutely.
It has been far, far better received than we even dreamed of.
Oh yeah.
We actually have reviews on iTunes, which is shocking.
They like us. They really like us.
Obviously, if you could go onto iTunes and give us a 5-star rating, we would appreciate it.
It would be scrumptious.
Same on any podcatcher of your choice. And, yep, What's the Space for 2020? We'll be going straight into Season 1.0 of BattleBots.
Mm.
Also, what's that, Taco? What do you mean you want revenge?
Uh-oh.
Podcats on the warpath.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, coming up now is The Grizz's interview with Andrew Lindsay.
Enjoy. Hello, and we are back. I am joined by the creator of Spike and Spike 2. You may have seen him on BattleBots, the Long Beach pay-per-view. Also on Season 3 of BattleBots. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Andrew Lindsay.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Doing just fine, thanks.
Well, to be honest, we're here to talk a plethora of subjects when it comes to old-school robot building, mainly the shows that you were a part of back in the day from Robot Wars 1996, 97, and then a few of their BattleBots shows.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, before we kind of get into that, when did you start getting into robot combat, as a fan, and then kind of evolving that into becoming a builder?
That would be back when I was in college in 1990, I think early 96, I saw a special on TV about Robot Wars, the original underground event that ran in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I saw a special on TV about this, and I was just fascinated with this and immediately thought, wow, I have to go and do that. That looks like a lot of fun. And I then proceeded to get together just random scrap parts and got sponsorship from a local machine shop who did welding and put together what was really, by modern standards, a fairly terrible robot, but, he still learned a lot doing it.
Do you still have your original robots?
I have parts of them. I've got the shell and most of the chassis from the first one that I built, and some of the other parts and motors are lying around in storage mostly. I'm thinking once we finish remodeling the condo, I might hang them on the wall or something just as a trophy.
Was Spike your first bot, or did you make something else before that?
Well, we had an early version of Spike that I took to Dragon Con and lost in seconds in the first fight there. I got pushed off the arena table, and then I rebuilt that. But that was my first real serious actual thing I built myself. Back when I was in high school, I built little robots from kits, the kind of robot that would just drive across the floor, bump into a wall, back up and turn, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Spike was really the first thing I actually designed and built from scratch myself.
So how did you find that? Was it just kind of a thing that you just kind of trial and error, or did you kind of know a little bit about what you were doing as you'd done it?
It was a lot of trial and error. I didn't really have any familiarity with the RC car electronics we were using at the time, so I had to learn those by trial and error.
Okay.
I learned a lot about balance and steering My first attempt to make a robot was unsteerable because the wheels were not well placed relative to the center of gravity, so the thing just wouldn't drive on even on a smooth floor, and I had to redesign that. I had to learn a lot about just stuff like traction and also practical things like how to better prepare or protect your wiring so it can't get damaged. You know, you don't want to run wires against a sharp edge of metal inside the chassis, things like that.
Oh yeah, that's a good way to just go into a match completely dead as it starts. So as we say, like, Spike did compete at the Robot Wars 1996 show. Is there any specific memories that you may have there as a roboteer or just as a spectator as the whole show kind of went on over the, was it a course of a weekend or was it a one day event?
That was a weekend event. I believe it was a Friday through Sunday. And it was really different than modern events. No one knew what they were doing. Everyone was just trying completely different random things that you would never see today because, you know, people have figured out how to make a robot that works.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, back then you saw people putting chainsaws and power drills and things like that. And there were also a lot of robots that use things like nets and sticky tape that aren't allowed these days. And what I learned from that event was mostly having a good wedge and a lot of pushing power will just win you a lot of matches by itself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably back in the early days, that seems to be the way to go.
My first match was against a robot with a chainsaw, and I had plastic armor. And you'd think chainsaw is good against plastic armor, but it didn't really do much to me. And then I just pushed their robot into a wall and broke their chainsaw. So
was that the Edgar the Hate Bug?
Edgar the Hate Bug, yes. Yeah. Their robot was a chainsaw and four power screwdriver motors to make it move.
Right. As you kind of said with the everybody was just trying everything, like it seems as if that was also the same way that some of these events were set up, with the way that your first match in the tournament was a dual, like kind of singles match where four robots went in at one time, but like you were kind of it was you against Edgar, and then there was another two robots that were fighting against each other at the same time. But like, were you allowed to like interact and fight each other, or is it just a case of, right, this is your opponent, don't bother with those two?
Yeah, you were supposed to stick on your side of the arena because they would basically divide the arena in half, except they didn't actually have a divider, and they'd put two robots on one side and two on the other side and run two fights at once. But people would often wander over the line and sometimes mix it up with the other robot too, even though they weren't supposed to. And they did that mostly to save time, just because the event was only 3 days long and they had too many featherweights.
Yeah, so, I thought that would have been the case.
One thing a lot of teams did was bring a heavyweight, and then to get extra members for their team, throw in a featherweight too. And a featherweight would sometimes be something like an RC car with a saw glued to the front or something. You know, not a serious entry,
but just for the thrill of the show.
Just to get extra team members.
Right.
Because heavyweights, you know, you'd still only get, I think, two people on your team.
Okay.
So if they need more help, they'd also bring a featherweight, and it would get wrecked in its first fight. So, but, you know, that would just get them extra team members for their heavyweight.
That's actually moderately smart. Completely not what I thought when you said it originally. Yeah, so, like, I mean, Spike done reasonably well through his first tournament, obviously getting wins over Edgar the Hate Bug, Yo Mama, and Bite Me, like some very creative names there. And then fell in the semifinals to your future partner in crime, funnily enough, the Wedge of Doom.
Yes, he built a very good wedge, and he basically built a scaled-down version of La Machine, and it was really effective.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get my lifter arm underneath his robot. And back at 96, you were allowed to win by pinning. So he just pinned my robot against the wall and won.
Okay, so is that exactly what that is? Just pinning the robot against the wall and for, like, is it... Like, what is the actual ruling with that?
The ruling was that you would pin the other robot against the wall and they would count it out. And at the end of the count out, you would have to back off and demonstrate that your robot could still move.
Okay.
There were a couple of matches where both robots, where the robot underneath would sometimes get stuck, and then it would be considered a mutual knockout.
Right. Yeah, because I was watching a few of the matches before we started, and sometimes it did come up by pin, and I'm like, I don't understand what that is. So,
yeah, they changed that rule for 97. In 97, they didn't allow pinning as a way of winning anymore.
Yeah, I would argue that it's probably not exactly very fair, because then everyone would just be like, oh, let's put in as big a motor as we can have so that we have the most pushing power. And In a way, I'd say it's just kind of a boring way to win a fight.
Yeah, and there were a lot of fights in 96 that ended that way, so that's why they changed the rule.
Yeah.
They also changed the rule in 97 to not allow nets or other entangling devices.
Yeah, there's been some very strange kind of contraptions that I've seen. Like, there was that one robot, I think it was SPS, that was just a couple of balloons with a net on it.
Yeah, that was in 95, I think.
Yeah, I think that they continue coming back with different variations of robots like that, and it's just it's some bizarre stuff that, like, by all means, like, it's that kind of thing of, like, you know, everyone's throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks, and evidently, like, the idea of a giant balloon with a net was an idea that made it there, so all the more power to them for being creative.
You did see a lot more creativity back in those days because nobody knew what would be effective, so everyone was just trying any random idea.
Yeah, exactly.
These days, the robots are much better, but it seems like you're seeing the same handful of ideas done over and over.
Yeah, definitely. This is my vertical saw robot. Oh, and I'm guessing a vertical saw robot.
Yeah.
I mean, like, as you say, exactly, they are all, like, the engineering and everything, like, these days is absolutely incredible, but I would love to see, like, a little more bizarre entries like back in the day.
That's why I like robots like Huge, because they actually tried out something new and different, and it worked, and no one had thought to do what they're doing, at least not in the American circuit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So,
you know, I like to see robots like that are trying something different.
Have you ever seen any of the UK Robot Wars TV show that kind of happened after this whole time passed?
I've watched a few of the episodes of that.
Did you ever see a robot called Psycho Sprout?
No, I don't think I have.
He was in the first season. What it pretty much was just I think it was made of fiberglass, and it was just a remote control car that was in the middle of this giant sprout ball, and then it just had like a big like net meshing on it, so the RC car would just kind of drive forward and roll up the giant sprout, and the sprout would just kind of drive about the arena. It was very bizarre.
Oh, there was a robot like that at Robot Wars 1995 called the Orb of Doom, which
yes,
was
that's right,
giant ball that rolled around, although that was done with an offset weight inside.
All right. Yeah, because that was the match I seen. It was Orb of Doom against SPS2. Mm-hmm. And it was a very, very slow match.
Yeah, but the Orb of Doom didn't have any kind of weapon. It just rolled around.
I guess more of a defensive bot.
It was just, apparently they planned for a weapon, but they didn't finish it in time. This was also something you saw a lot in those days, because a lot of these robots were built over the course of a couple weekends leading up to the event. You know, there was always a few teams that were still building their robot when they showed up and switched it on for the first time in the arena.
Oh, God, that would be worrying at times.
Yeah, they didn't have any, back at that original event, they didn't have a safety box, and you weren't required to demonstrate that your robot runs or shuts off safely or anything. It was just, you weigh it, and then you bring it to the arena, and there's your fight. So some of those robots were being switched on for the first time ever in their first fight.
Yeah. Oh, God, If I was a robot builder, I don't know if I'd be able to do that. The kind of anxiety of like, oh, will this even work, would be too much for me.
Yeah, I mean, with my robots, I always got them done in time to at least drive them around a parking lot to make sure they worked first.
Yeah. Oh, well, did you ever manage to accidentally puncture any tires while you were testing it out?
No, but I did once shatter a window that was a sliding glass window in my old apartment. Once I was testing a robot and driving around in my living room and had a radio glitch, and a robot took off at full speed through the window out into the backyard.
I suppose it could have been worse. Like, you could have been up like a couple of floors up and it just drives like right out the window and plummets to its doom.
Yeah, but the window was expensive to replace.
Yeah. Probably more, just as much as the robot, maybe.
Probably, because that robot was really cheap. That was when I was experimenting with kiddie car motors, which you can get for like 10 bucks a piece. They're really cheap and powerful enough to drive around a small robot.
I can ask any roboteer that I ever get to talk to, like, for anyone that would want to get into, like, sort of starting to build robots, would you say, like, starting off with a featherweight is, or maybe even smaller these days, like a beetleweight or something, would be the best way to start?
These days, I'd recommend starting off with a beetleweight or an antweight, because you can build those really cheap, mm-hmm. but they involve the same basic technology as the bigger robots. So that's really a good way to get started and get interested, because even the even a featherweight can be kind of expensive and require some decent tools to make. But these little tiny robots, you can make them with not much more than a 3D printer and some, you know, simple tools. And you'll learn a lot that'll then apply to the bigger robots.
And is it just more of a case of scale and obviously price when it comes to like working your way up in terms of size of robots?
Yeah, scale, price is a big part of it because the batteries, the motors, the electronics just all get more expensive. Mm-hmm. And also at the bigger scales, you're probably going to want to go with better materials than plastic, welded parts, an actual machine shop instead of doing it yourself at home. But it gets really expensive in the higher classes.
Yeah, I could imagine. Just seeing some of the heartbreak of some of the, you know, like at least on current BattleBots when just some of the robots just fall apart and you could just kind of see in their faces like that was X amounts of thousands of dollars that's just all over the BattleBox.
Even when you win, it can in BattleBots, it can cost you a few thousand dollars. You see robots like Hypershock that can go in and win a fight, but then burn up $5,000 worth of motors in the process.
Right, yeah.
So it's getting really expensive.
But for the love of the sport, I guess, that's probably why a lot of people still do this.
Oh, it's amazing to watch. Yeah, it's the fights these days are just much more exciting than they were back when I started.
Have you seen the most recent episode of BattleBots before I say anything?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Watched that Friday night.
Just watching the emotion after Minotaur won their matchup was this like, man, like you could really just feel the emotion of like why these people love doing this sport.
Yep, and that's always been there, even back in the early days when I started. You know, that's the one thing that hasn't changed is how much the people doing this love the sport.
Yeah, and as a fan on the other side of the rail, we love yous for it. Also, you were in a few rumbles in the 1996 show. So how did they come about? Were they just a case of like, does anyone just want to put their robot in for a rumble, or was it something that was like pre-planned, or how did that work out?
They basically just called out, you know, went around the pits, asked for people for a rumble, and you know, I don't know if there was much scheduling for it or not. Mm-hmm. It was just a really loose event back in those days. The one thing that I did that was kind of unique in '96 was one of those rumbles was a team match where the robots were divided up into two teams, kind of arbitrarily picked, I think. And you know, they just fought team, you know, one team versus the other. But it was pretty much entirely just an exhibition thing to, you know, basically the rumbles were, a lot of them were to keep a show going while the big robots, while the heavyweights got ready for their final matches.
Right, yeah.
So it was just whatever featherweights and lightweights are ready and up to run, hey, you can be in a rumble.
Okay, yeah, because I noticed that you were definitely in more than one of them, and that there ended up being about six rumbles overall. That was my assumption, was anyone want to have a match? Yes, absolutely, let's go.
Pretty much, yeah. There were also a handful of exhibition matches, too. You know, people who specifically had a grudge against somebody else, and they both had working robots, so they would sometimes just set up a fight between them.
Was there any kind of fights from, like, different weight divisions against each other?
There was a fight in 97 between Steel at Work, which was a heavyweight, and WYSIWYG, which was a featherweight. And that was done partially because those were both robots from overseas, which was unusual back then. WYSIWYG was from the UK, and Steel at Work was from France, I think. Okay. And they were both wedges. So they put them in the arena, and the featherweight, WYSIWYG, ended up winning because Steel at Work couldn't run for more than a few seconds without breaking down. So, you know, drove into a wall, and the shock of hitting the wall, I think it dislocated their drive chains or something, so.
Yeah, well, WYSIWYG was actually in the first season of Robot Wars. It was actually a stock robot because apparently there wasn't enough actual full-fledged teams to get the six episodes out that they wanted, so they had to put in a couple of stock robots, and WYSIWYG was one of them. So it's quite funny to see WYSIWYG's sort of origins on these shows.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they were at Robot Wars 97, I think.
I'm pretty sure they were in one of the melees with you.
They may have been. I haven't gone back and looked at all of those, but yeah. I mean, they were I kind of recall it mostly just being a fast wedge robot.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was actually made of wood as well. Yes, they actually were. I just found it there. So what would be a kind of strategy in like a melee, if there even is a strategy?
Yeah, it depends on what you're trying to do, because, I mean, back then the melees barely even had winners, so you're mostly just trying to drive around and show off and have fun. You know, I tried to pick out, when I was in the melees, I tried to pick out an individual opponent who I thought I could make a good showing against and go after them for a bit and then maybe switch up to a different target. But it was just a lot of, I mean, the melees back then, they didn't even really have winners. So it was mostly just trying to drive around and have fun and show off your robot. And especially if you got knocked out early in the main competition and wanted to get more driving time in.
Well, so moving on to the 97 show, you brought in Spake 2, which definitely seemed like a big step up from the original Spake.
Yeah, it was a complete redesign from scratch. I kept the basic idea of a lifting arm, but I made it so the arm was much larger and the whole robot was like a wedge that was underneath the arm. I improved the drive speed by at least 4 times, and I made the robot able to drive upside down and made it able to right itself after flipping itself right side up. That was also the year that the machine shop that had sponsored me in 96 didn't sponsor me in 97, so I basically had to build the whole robot myself from hand, and I'm actually fairly pleased at how it came out. My one big mistake was using cheap pop rivets to hold the frame together, and they were loosening up throughout the entire course of the event, so that by the end of the event, the whole frame was just loose and shaking, and parts of it were dragging on the ground. So that was one thing not to do. Overall, it was a much better robot.
Yeah, so with stuff like the pop rivets kind of coming out, would that kind of hinder like driving and stuff like that?
I had a lot of problem in my third match because my robot started getting intermittently stuck on the floor, and it was because the frame was sagging in the middle and actually hitting the floor on uneven spots.
Right. So definitely more expensive rivets in the future. Would that be the thing for Spake?
Yeah, I went back to all welded connections after that.
Okay. So just looking at your run, once again, you managed to get through to the semifinals in the 1997 event, like with wins over Slow-Mo and even over KMM, which was a former lightweight champion.
That was a great fight against KMM. That's one of my better ones.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I watched just before we came on. And there was also Fishstick. Is it Fishstick from Guam?
Fishstick from Guam was a big bar spinner with universal joints in the bars so they could flop up. And they loosened up my chassis a bit. But I was actually really lucky to get under them, flip them over, and hit their battery pack in the process and set their robot on fire, which was an unusual thing in those days. There not too many robots would actually catch on fire like that. So that was a fight. That was a fight I was lucky to win because I was having structural problems already going into that fight.
Oh, we did love a bit of fire in Robot Wars, though, don't we? And BattleBots, obviously.
Yeah.
So at this kind of point, you're in the semifinals and your robot is bigger, is better, is badder than it was previously. Did you think that you really had a chance at this point?
I thought I had a chance. I was mostly worried about fighting the Wedge of Doom again because I didn't think I would be able to get underneath his robot. I had actually built an entirely separate arm from my robot with a hinge spatula end, but I never actually ended up getting to use it because I lost my fourth fight against Red Green, which was this kind of invertible wedge grabber robot. And that actually came down to a judge decision. And, you know, I couldn't do anything to his robot because it couldn't really be flipped over. And it was also fairly fast and well driven itself. So, but that was, you know, it was still a pretty good fight. We both got to show off what our robots could do. I actually got to show off my robot's ability to self-right in that fight, even though I ended up losing the fight.
Hey, you're predating some other robots and with their self-righters here. And the Robot Wars TV show, like, they made a big deal of this robot Cassius being the first ever robot to self-right, and you've predated it by at least a year.
Well, Biohazard showed off its amazing self-righting ability back in 96.
Oh,
so that kind of beat me there.
He beat you out in that. Was there any other melees that you were a part of in the 97 show? Because 97 definitely seems to be the kind of blind spot right now when it comes to these old shows with footage being available.
I actually have footage of every single match from 1997 I'm in the process of editing. I've got about 30 hours of raw footage from 1997, and it's mostly fairly terrible quality, so it's taking a long time to get it edited and put together. But I do have footage of every single match from 97 on among the various pieces of footage I have.
I can just hear all the Robot Wars fans and BattleBots fans, like, their ears just pricking up. It's like, there's stuff out there, and it could be coming on the internet at some point. Salivating. There we go. That's the word.
Yeah, I had several good melees in 97. I got to actually get revenge on the robot that defeated me in the fourth match, so that was good. And I also got to push an RC car into the wall and break it, so I guess that was kind of a win there.
Sounds like it, yeah, definitely. A win is a win. Well, that sounds awesome. Like, obviously, just keep us updated with whenever any of that stuff becomes available, because we'd happily love to have a look at it.
All right. I will post an announcement about it when it's done. There's just a lot to go through.
Yeah, of course. But no, looking forward to it. Also, you were at the first... was this the first ever BattleBots show? The one in Long Island... Long Beach?
I believe it was. I know they had an underground robot street fight, but that wasn't really a show. That was just some builders getting together to show off. And then there was the Long Beach event, which was the first real BattleBots. And unfortunately, they didn't have featherweights at that event. So the Wedge of Doom's builder and I teamed up to make our robots into a multibot to compete in the lightweight class.
Yes. Once again, sadly, there's not a lot of kind of footage from Long Beach other than the documentary, which is just pretty much 10 minutes of actual interviews and stuff like that, and then just half an hour of miscellaneous robots crashing into each other. So, but I did see one of your matches with the Wedge of Doom against the Missing Link.
Yeah, that was our only match.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, we didn't do well.
Yeah, because trying to figure out the tournament setup was confusing. Me and my co-host were looking at it yesterday, and so he was reading out all these results, and then it's like, right, and then all these robots go into the losers bracket, and then it continues on, and just my head was hurting just trying to figure it out. It just seemed very overly complicated.
Yeah, it was a double elimination, but I don't really remember exactly what the tournament schedule was. I know that we were only in one match because we got just completely knocked out seconds into it, pretty much.
Yeah, well, to be honest, you've only had one match. You haven't been eliminated twice. That makes you, by proxy, the champion.
Yeah, ours was not that serious of an entry. I mean, it was two old featherweights thrown together as a multibot.
Yeah. Was that just kind of all that you'd done at the Long Beach show?
Pretty much, yeah. That was my only real fight there.
So is there any other kind of memories or comments or anything like that from the Long Beach show that you have? Did you stay for the whole weekend, first of all?
I did stay for the whole weekend. I watched all the finals. One thing that really caught a lot of people by surprise at the Long Beach event was the arena hazards, and in particular the kill saws.
Yeah.
You know, at Robot Wars USA, the event was just sitting on a concrete floor. There was nothing coming out of the floor. A lot of robots had open bottoms. You know, okay. No armor at all on their underside. And then at Long Beach, all of a sudden there were these saw blades that would just come up out of the floor randomly. And I remember in particular, Vlad the Impaler had an open underside and just got completely disabled when saw blades came up from the bottom and cut their drive chains.
Oh.
And, you know, just like that, because no one expected that.
And then from then, that was lessons learned.
Yeah, I mean, people had to start making design changes after that, you know, to deal with stuff hitting the robot from the underside.
Yeah, really the only other matches that were kind of available from this Long Beach show were a few of the rumbles. Did you not participate in the lightweight rumble?
I did. I got knocked out fairly quickly. There was actually some kind of loose connection inside my speed controller because I'd been using the same electronic speed controller for years. My robot got slammed against the wall and then it wouldn't move anymore. That was pretty much that. I was using an old Vantech speed controller and it's useful, but they're not that well battle hardened compared to what we have now.
Right, yeah. Was it also a sort of a case of, like you says you used it for a while, was it just kind of wear and tear or...
Yeah, there was. There were definitely broken connections in that, you know, loose wire, loose connections. It was really something I'd been running with for a couple of years, had gone through the previous events, so that really needed replacing.
So from there, whatever kind of happened with Spike or Wedge of Doom, the team, did it continue as a team or did it kind of split up just right after that?
Yeah, we never teamed up again. That was just a one-time thing, really.
Yeah.
And it was done just so both of us could compete at the new BattleBots.
Right.
I competed with Spike at a couple of Bot Bash events, which was a small event that was run out in Arizona. And then the last competition I did with Spike was the weird MTV pilot for UK Robot Wars.
Yes, let's get into that. I want to hear more about this. So, yeah, you says that you took Spike to the MTV pilot, which I was reading up on, and this whole thing just seems a bit all over the place.
It really was. They put out a call for robots for this pilot, but they put it out right after BattleBots had happened, and there were almost no competitors that were ready to go, and almost no heavyweights. So I decided to take Spike and weld about 100 pounds of iron plate on the outside and call it a heavyweight and compete with it.
Yeah. And you also got picked for the running for it?
Yeah, they picked and it basically got me a paid vacation to England. So
yeah, because I think from what I read, I'm pretty sure this might have been one of the first shows that might have been taped with the new iteration of the arena that was used at the time.
It may have been. I don't really keep track of what the UK arena has been through.
Yeah, it just says here, as it was filmed prior to the Fourth Wars, the MTV pilot was the first competition to use the third iteration of the Robot Wars arena. So there you go. You were the first people to grace that special arena.
Okay.
That's something to take away from it, I guess. So I was also reading you had one fight against, was it the Mauler?
Yes, against the South Bay Mauler, because they were one of the few teams that still had their robot ready to go and could just go over to the UK with it. Yeah, it wasn't much of a fight, I'm afraid. I mean, I had a featherweight with 100 pounds of steel plate welded on the outside, and I'm kind of amazed it moved at all with that kind of weight on it.
Yeah.
And I mostly just drove around slowly and then got my wheels ripped off, so...
Oh, dear. Yeah, because I'm surprised they actually even let the Mauler compete, because there was one time where Mauler came over for, like, a world championship that Robot Wars was doing, and it was deemed too unsafe to actually compete and was disqualified. So, seeing that it was on this, like, I don't know if maybe changes were made to Mauler since then, but it just got quite surprising to actually see that... The Mauler was even considered brought back, but there you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was pretty much the same Mauler that had competed previously in the US, but I don't know for sure.
It seems so, looking back on it. Like, I've watched, obviously, some Battle Bots with Mauler on it, and it doesn't look any different there, but I guess maybe this is a whole kind of, you know, behind-the-scenes thing that I guess I don't really know about, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really know what version of the Mauler it was or if changes had been made internally. So
it was. It finally came down to four bots. It was originally meant to be eight robots that were put in it, but I think one of them pulled out, and so they just completely changed the setup of the show. So the only four robots that actually got to fight were Frenzy, the Mangulator, the Mauler, and yourself, Spike, as we said. And the whole tournament was eventually won by the Mauler. So, you know, at least you were in there with the winner, I guess. And
yeah. This is an interesting experience.
Yeah, this is like another one of these kind of lost pilot episodes of Robot Combat that just never will see the light of day, I'm going to assume.
Yeah, I don't know if any of that footage is available anywhere.
Yeah, see, this is the kind of stuff that I really want to get my hands on. Just bizarre stuff like this. So moving on from there, you appeared in one season of the BattleBots TV show, BattleBots 3.0.
Yeah, so after BattleBots was running for a few years and a serious thing, a friend of mine and I built a lightweight robot, you know, just to try and compete again. It wasn't a very good robot, but we apparently did win a few fights with it.
You defeated Speed Bump and Frogmoth.
Froghemoth.
Yes, that. Sorry. There's a robot here called Behemoth, but they pronounce it really weird, so it's like Behemoth. And so that's clearly why I was trying to read that in such a bizarre way there. Apologies.
Yeah, that robot was very low budget and built over the course of a couple weekends, you know, kind of like what you would see back at the old USA Robot Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of surprised it even won any matches, because it really wasn't very good and had some major design flaws.
Such as?
Well, it couldn't self-right was one issue, but the biggest problem we had was that our drivetrain kept failing because we were using old power wheelchair motors and running them on twice their original voltage. Mm-hmm. And the motors held up okay to that, but they were coupled to the wheels by pins that went through the axle, and those pins kept shearing. So in our third fight, our robot just sort of lost drive power. That was because we sheared the pins on both sides and then just couldn't put any torque through to the wheels.
So, like, the actual connection was still moving, but the wheels just weren't attached to it anymore?
The wheel was still on the axle, but the axle was just spinning in the wheel because there was torque getting transmitted.
And, well, that was kind of it for Mantis, for BattleBots?
Yeah, we never rebuilt it. I reused a linear actuator in a featherweight that I built and competed with locally, and I still have the motors and some of the other parts sitting around, but we never rebuilt Mantis as such.
Like, I remember, like, the old seasons of BattleBots loved their giant melees again. Was Mantis ever in any of those?
No, after it lost its third fight, we couldn't repair the drive system.
Okay.
We couldn't figure out a way to keep the pins from shearing.
So it was just kind of... Did you hang about for the rest of the TV taping, or did you just kind of head home after that?
We headed home. We actually didn't schedule our trip to even stay towards the end of the event. You know, we had some plans that if we actually did really well, we would, you know, extend our vacations. But as it was, we headed home halfway through the filming, because filming was something like a week long. And I was also not feeling well at this point. I ended up getting pink eye after coming home from that event.
That sounds great.
That particular event was really not at a good venue. They didn't even have running water at the pits. And everyone was using porta potties, but there weren't enough porta potties for everyone. It was kind of a mess.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That sounds like music festival levels of kind of insane with the way that happens.
Yeah, it kind of was, because they were filming in a warehouse on an abandoned military base, and they had to have people bust in and out because there wasn't good parking on site, and it was really not a great venue.
No.
So I was after we lost our third fight, we were both just ready to go home.
Yeah, and so that was the end of Mantis it was. And so was this your last robot that you had? Was this Gru? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, that was Gru. That was a featherweight that I took to a couple of the local competitions here. Mm-hmm. And I basically took the linear actuator out of Mantis and built a crusher out of it. And I could get about 1,000 pounds of force on the tip of the crusher.
Ooh. I like on this, the robot details, the secondary weapon is, it may actually work this time.
Right, because the first year it didn't work at all, because the drive motors that I used for the drivetrain just failed entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was the weirdest failure. The armature actually ripped free from the motor shaft inside.
All right.
Which I've never seen before, but that happened to those. Then I completely redesigned it for the second year and actually won a couple matches, so I'm kind of happy with that, but ended up retiring the robot anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was the reason? Was it just getting too pricey, or was it just...
Yeah, it needed a complete rebuild. I broke the linear actuator because the gearbox on the actuator actually had a fairly fragile cast aluminum gearbox, and I got flipped over repeatedly and showed off my self-righting system until the actual actuator broke apart. So I was also, at that point, still using the same old Vantec speed controller, which was really starting to just get intermittent and flaky.
Oh, yeah. The parts that you're saying that you needed to repair, I take it they're not exactly, you know, like pocket money style prices?
Yeah, it was starting to get too expensive to actually stay competitive.
Oh. Well, I do think it's quite awesome that you still have like all these bits and pieces of these robots kind of around you. It's just at least sentimental in that kind of way.
Yeah, I still have a lot of the armor plates and a lot of the chassis and such.
Moving on from that, though, you also said you were involved with the BattleBots pay-per-view.
I was a judge during that. I couldn't afford to compete at that point,
mm-hmm.
but I called them up and said, you know, I can fly out and judge one of your judges. And they agreed, and they flew me out for the Las Vegas event. And that was fun.
Yeah. So what was it like in the pits for that show? Was it any better than your experience at BattleBots 3.0?
Yeah, that one was at an actual better venue in Las Vegas. And it was mostly tents in a parking lot. They still had, you know, better facilities and running water. And it was also a lot of cameras, a lot of actual attention made to making this into a televised presentation. You know, that was all stuff that most of the other events I'd been to before that didn't have. They actually had, you know, announcers and better lighting in the arena. You know, it was actually set up with the intent of making it into a televised event.
Yeah, I do kind of like the way that, like, how the battle box, for the most part, has pretty much just always stayed the same as it was. Like, looking at the Long Beach show and then, like, the pay-per-view, this is really the first time getting to see the proper battle box in action. Considering, like, it's not really changed that much, up until these days, is quite impressive and kind of goes to show that sometimes there isn't really that much need for change.
The one change that I have noticed from those days is that the early version of the battle box actually had ramps in the corners to mm-hmm. allow robots to get over the spike strip when they were coming in and out of the arena.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw a fair number of robots get stuck on those ramps and lose the matches because of that. In the modern battle box, they've gotten rid of the ramps, so you don't see people getting stuck there anymore. And they actually have some system where the spike strip can swing out of the way to get people in and out of the arena.
Right, yeah, that's right, because there was, I think, Kilohertz lost one of its matches on the pay-per-view through that very same method that you just mentioned. Kind of got just, all the wheels just kind of got stuck, like, off of the ground because it was kind of wedged against the ramp.
Yes, yeah, that happened to a number of robots. I remember the Kilohertz team. They were interesting people. One little anecdote about them is that there was an interesting bit that they went through that was, I guess, kind of a cultural miscommunication almost.
Okay.
They flew their robot out from the UK in pieces and reassembled it in the pits. And it turned out that they were missing some small piece of hardware, some bolt or washer or something. Mm-hmm. And they asked someone at the Las Vegas event, is there a hardware store around here? And somebody told them, yes, it's just down the road. Well, in the UK, just down the road means walking distance.
Yes.
In Las Vegas, just down the road means an hour's drive out into the desert.
Oh, dear.
That came as a bit of a surprise to them.
They must have been walking for a while, like, where is this place? It's not anywhere near here. Oh, that's really funny. That's excellent. So what were some of your kind of duties? Like, obviously, you say as a judge, like, but was there anything else kind of on top of that that you were required to do while you were at the pay-per-view?
That was basically it. I sat at the judge's booth for the matches that I was judging and mm-hmm. scored it on points when it came down to the judges, and there wasn't much else involved for it. I wasn't the judge for all. They had at least four different judges, and we rotated in and out, and they would tell me when they needed me and when they didn't need me. I was free to watch or wander around the pits and talk to people.
What were some of the matches that you actually done the judging on?
I remember I did the match for Buddy Lee versus some kind of spinning robot whose name I don't remember, and Buddy Lee won that because the other robot lost all of its drivetrain internally, and there were some people who were blaming the judges for that match, but it was a fairly straightforward thing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember judging a match with Christian Carlberg's robot Overkill, which was the giant whackbot saw mm-hmm. or knife kind of thing, and at one point during the match, it basically slammed into the wall and went partially up the wall right in front of the judges, and we all ducked behind the table when that happened.
Yeah. Well, when something that size is flailing at you, I would probably do the same.
Yeah. I mean, I think it maybe even have been a super heavyweight that year. I'm not sure.
So were these like maybe pre-show matches?
There were some pre-show matches, but there were also some actual show matches that I judged.
Okay.
I also remember the lightweight melee, where it was really hard to tell what was going on while judging because there were at least a dozen robots in the arena all trying to fight each other simultaneously, and it's really hard to try and pick out a single winner from that.
Oh, yeah. Just to even try to take notes on some of these melees has been a nightmare, so I just kind of make standard observations for some of the things, and it's just like, this is just insanity. So that's me just trying to take notes of it just to talk about it, so Lord knows how people manage to judge winners out of these kind of matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard for the melees. And I think that's why in the old Robot Wars days, a lot of the melees that I was in didn't even really have a winner. It was just, well, that was a fun melee. On to the next match now.
Yeah. It's almost like it was kind of like, as you were saying, like kind of exhibition matches just to show off like some robots.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like that's excellent. Like it's really been a hell of a chat. Is there anything else that you can think of that you want to share?
Oh, there have been turning points, I think, in robot combat that have happened that, you know, some of them I've been privileged to see. I think when Biohazard first showed up at 1996, that was a turning point
mm-hmm.
because everyone else had robots that were just clearly made in a garage over a couple of weekends. And then Carlo Bertaccini shows up with this beautifully machined, precise robot and, you know, just completely amazed everyone with the build quality. And the thing I remember the most is that everyone else would be tearing the robots apart to do repairs and improvements between matches. And he'd just bring his robot into the pits, plug it into the charger and leave it.
Big one.
And then I think the era of modern spinners really started probably with Nightmare. They showed up at the Long Beach event, and they couldn't use their robot to full effectiveness because the Long Beach arena didn't have a roof. So BattleBots made them run the blade downwards. The robot didn't work well. And then at Las Vegas was the first one where it actually could run the blade in the proper direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it faced Rhino, I think, on that show.
Did it? I don't remember.
I think it did.
But these days, yes. Though, it's just amazing how much more energetic robots have gotten. I mean, how a lot of it comes is the biggest factor is probably the lithium batteries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the old Robot Wars days, most of the heavier robots were using lead acid batteries. They had to carry a quarter to a third of their weight just in batteries just to move. These days, it's just amazing how active and energetic the robots can be and how they can, you know, just fly across the arena and then bounce 10 feet in the air and land and still be going and fighting. You know, that's just something you never saw back in the early days.
Yeah, Cobalt.
But unfortunately, it's also gotten much, much more expensive to actually compete.
Oh, I could imagine.
A big part of the reason why I don't compete anymore is just I can't afford to spend that kind of money.
Oh, it would be nice though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. At least you've had a run at it. Like this has been a great little chat. And to be honest, it's a lot more than I can say that I've ever done. The closest I've came to robot combat is just playing with the old robots that they used to sell back when I was a child.
Yeah, I kind of remember those. Yeah.
I made some sweet matches, though, I must admit. But, look, man, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything that you kind of want to maybe, pimp out, maybe your YouTube channel that has a lot of these matches that we kind of discussed on it today?
Yeah, I do have a YouTube channel where I have posted all of my 96 matches already, and I am working on getting my 97 matches up and done, and I also will just sometimes randomly post other stuff from my life there, so it's not just a robot combat channel. But yeah, that is one thing that people can go and look at if they like.
Yeah, to be honest, that's wanted to bring that because that is basically where we're going to be using a lot of the matches to kind of cover the Robot Wars 96 event when we start covering it in just a few weeks.
Okay.
So we're looking to hopefully go through as many of the matches as possible that are available. And so it's just to kind of say that, you know, to you personally, thank you for putting them up because that's made our lives a lot easier in terms of managing to cover some of this stuff. Is there anything else before we wrap up?
No, I think that's pretty good talk.
All right. That's excellent. Well, thank you very much for listening.